Welcome to Pensive Series. Brian is a serial entrepreneur turned executive coach. Over the years, since he quit his investment banking job, Brian has built and sold a multi-million dollar portfolio of businesses. He has built, bought, and sold businesses in the retail, service, and commercial real estate sectors. Now Brian coaches and studies entrepreneurs, helping them to make transformations at both the personal and organizational levels. Brian's clients include founders and executives at all levels, from seed round to post-exit.
Where did you grow up?
I was born in Wisconsin, and then I grew up in Southwest Florida, outside of a town called Fort Myers.
And then what were your first steps into the workspace?
I went to university. I got an undergraduate degree. Originally, I was studying anthropology and video. I thought I wanted to be a videographer and make ethnographies, you know, living all over the world. And then I realized very quickly when I started a business in school that business was going to be a little bit more, I don't want to say fulfilling, but I think at the time it felt fulfilling because I had money to pay for things. And, you know, all of a sudden you're popular because you're hiring all of your friends and making, you know, making them money as well. So I decided to study business. And at the time I was going to a school in Tennessee that the closest thing to business I had was a very, very philosophical economics degree. So I ended up going to University of Denver in Denver, Colorado, where not only did I get an undergraduate degree that was a finance and real estate focus, I then also got a degree in a master's degree in finance there in Denver. And then while I was getting the degree in finance, I began working in a boutique investment bank in Denver, which is the largest construction and engineering focused investment bank in the country. And then from there, I got into commercial real estate investment banking. And so that was really my first steps into the working world.
And is there a story that sort of illustrates that turning point, how you got into a business?
How I got into my own business?
Well,
or
generally, the decision that you made to go into a business.
Yeah, I think it was needing to make some money. And at the time, I was going to a little school in Suwanee, Tennessee, and there was really only one option to get a job, and that was working at the coffee house. And it was absolutely horrible. It was the worst thing ever, and plus, because I was a freshman, one of, if not the only guy that worked there, I was immediately put on the worst shifts because I was the youngest. I was you know, just sort of the outlier of the group. And very quickly, you know, working there, serving up coffee and burning my hands while my friends were out partying, I thought there has to be a better way. And so that was really the turning point for me, realizing that unlike in high school, you know, going to work after school, which kept me from doing homework, in this case, you know, going to work was actually keeping me from doing the things that I wanted to do with my freedom. So that was the equating running my own business with freedom. That was really that deciding factor was, also hating working in a coffee shop.
And then how did that go? Like,
well, at the time I started a business that was, this was before we had Facebook at any of these universities. The business was going to parties and taking photos for just for the attendees of the party. And this was back when, you know, people would still go online, buy a photo and have it printed and delivered, shipped to them. It sounds almost crazy for us to do it today, but that was the first step into business. And then from there, at the time I was still studying anthropology and video. And so to me, there was still this artistic outlet because I was using lens-based media. But when I went to school and started studying business and I was around other business-minded people, that's when it shifted and I really stepped into understanding in enjoying the rationality of finance. All of a sudden, my math got much better when you put a dollar sign in front of a number. And one thing led to another, and I realized very quickly, if I'm going to be focusing on finance, the place to go is investment banking.
And then how did this lead into the work that you're doing right now? And can you also talk about the work you're doing right now?
Yeah. Well, it didn't lead directly to what I'm doing now, because I recall when I, one of the reasons I chose to get an MS, a Master's of Science, instead of an MBA, and focus in finance was at the, back when I had the entire world figured out, knew everything, when I was, you know, 23, I thought that the key to management was, if somebody's doing well, then you continue to pay them. If they're doing very well, you pay them more. And if they're not doing well, then you stop paying them. And I didn't understand all of the soft skills, so I really tried to avoid those. As I got into business, I realized very quickly also that I didn't, even with aggressive investment banking minded people, I oftentimes could not connect with, there's always that realm of people that are destined to be sort of middle management, and I just couldn't ever quite connect with that mindset. And without going into all of the entrepreneurial side to get to your question of what I'm doing today, I did leave, started a number of businesses that failed, and then ended up with a number that succeeded. But through that process then, I'm really condensing at this point, like almost 7 years of my life.
Okay, that's fine.
And through that process then, I began to learn, well, wow, you know, first of all, when you're starting out, you don't have money to pay people more. You have to come up with other ways. And you learn very quickly also that you're not going to manipulate people into working for you or working harder. One of the things that a lot of startups do is they overpromise. They promise things that they can't deliver. They're promising it based upon the growth of the company that is not guaranteed. And I did some of that, and I also experienced the downside of doing that and the pressure that comes from being a manager and having made those promises. But over time, as I grew this business, I learned a lot about myself. And one of the things that I began to learn over time was I wasn't connecting really with the mission of what we were doing. And this was a lot of things to do with commercial real estate, but in particular, making sure that small businesses could find space for their business. It wasn't necessarily that I was not aligned with that purpose. It was that our business was solely built around making money, and I was building a identity of being the entrepreneur in Denver. I really was trying to build up my position as a thought leader and as a, you know, well-connected young entrepreneur there. It burned me out very quickly. And there were some other economic things with the Denver real estate market where we started to realize, hey, it seems like it might be overheating a little bit. And so my business partners and I did decide to get out of that. When we exited those businesses, when we sold them, the buildings and the businesses, we ended up in a position where we had gone from lots of staff, lots of things to do every day, to for a little while I had one staff member, and then I was down to none. And that was a big turning point for me, because I went from, you know, being a president, CEO of a company, running that company, to really just a guy that had been that. I had a lot more experience. In fact, I was much more capable of starting a business at that point. But that transition of being like, well, I basically sold my identity because that I was so tied into that business. That led me through a process of sort of self-discovery and finding out, who the heck am I if I'm not the president of this company? If I can't introduce myself with a business card, then how the hell do I introduce myself? And that process led me to what I do today now, which is I work with entrepreneurs to really help them avoid that type of identity crisis which goes much deeper than that, because it's not just the identity crisis. It's that when people are not well-adjusted in running their companies, no matter what issue that the founder has, it's going to trickle down and just be amplified and magnified within an organization. So really what I do is almost like business consulting, but it's by just focusing on the person at the top, because it does have magnifying effects throughout the organization.
And what is one of the most important insights from that search within yourself?
There's been a number. One of them, I think one of the biggest ones that I had early on was, in order to live an outstanding life, it requires that you stand with, not stand out from people. And when you can stand with others, you still can stand out, but other people stand out too. And if you can sort of understand that we're all different and respect those differences, but then can still unite, instead of just being the guy who has the title, who's, you know, winning the awards, it's sort of the difference between being on stage and speaking to people because you have some sort of authority versus sitting down next to them and having a conversation. That's the difference between really having an outstanding life, not simply standing out. The other is that the vast majority of entrepreneurs, the vast majority of the issues that we face is based upon how we process fear. And as entrepreneurs, we're actually fear motivated most of the time, because as you know, a very primal response to fear is characterized by fight, flight, or freeze. Well, as entrepreneurs, what we do is when we're faced with fear, we fight, right?
Yeah.
We're going to face it. And sometimes we do flight. We get away from that fear through workaholism to sort of numb it. But really, it's understanding that when we use fear, what we're actually doing is using fear as a motivator to get away from it. When we're feeling, you know, imposter syndrome, for instance, it's the fear of that we haven't made it, that we're going to be found out for not truly being a success, that we are fundamentally a failure. And it's understanding that using that type of fear as motivation, it's a motivation to get away from a feeling rather than to get to something. And so if you're always just simply trying to get away from fear, it's a cycle that's going to always repeat itself, but you're never going to actually get to where you're feeling successful.
And do you have any rituals that sort of help you facilitate that philosophy?
Yeah, absolutely. I check in with myself every single day. I spend the first thing in the morning, I'm always doing my yoga, and almost as often I'm doing my meditation. If I have to choose between one or the other, I usually pick my yoga in the morning. And it's not a long thing. It's less than 10 minutes every morning. But I also spend time checking in regularly with what I consider to be the four key areas in life, which are body, health of body, health of mind, health of relationships, and financial health. And so I spend time seeing which one of those things, if any, are out of alignment, or what I can do to sort of bring them all up. If you think of them as the four legs of a table, I want them all to be stable, because if one of those is very far out of alignment, that's where I create instability, where something like fear can enter into the equation again.
And if you could give your younger self some advice, what kind of advice would you give?
That's a... a couple of different pieces of advice. The first one would probably be don't party as much.
Okay.
Sleep more. There's no reason that you should be sleeping 2 hours a night when you're building your business. I lost a lot of... I gained a lot of weight and lost a lot of hair that way. But I think the other thing would be really along the same lines is slow down. There's no reason. The speed is not something that the speed is something that will occur naturally. Like, you don't need to try to create the feeling of speed through just frenetic action. Just slow down and focus on purpose and taking deliberate action, as opposed to just taking action.
So then how do you define success?
So success is something that I've spent a lot of time redefining. And to me, success is a verb. And I've got some of my coaching clients, they talk about successing, because it's you know, it's a verb to them. And to me, success is threefold. It's got three components. It's living in such a way where your past does not cause depression, your future does not inspire anxiety, and your external actions are completely in line with your internal values and motivation. And really, if you listen to those, it's really the third one. If you do that, then all the other ones fall in line. But it's much easier to get to the third one intentionally if you have those first two in mind as well.
Who do you think are successful? Like, who comes in mind?
Man, who comes to mind as successful? I personally think that the most successful people are oftentimes the ones that go unnoticed. I mean, when you think about the people that are going out and doing things and are making a huge change in the world, they're not always the ones that we see and think about. Like, there's a guy in my neighborhood who, he's just this jolly older guy that rides around on his bike all the time and talks to people and helps young children that are, you know, learning how to ride a bicycle or falling down on the street or, you know, just, to me, this is a guy who's gotten to a place in his life where he is truly leading by example. The Tao Te Ching talks about that the highest form of leadership is a leader whose presence is barely known or perceived. The second highest leader is someone who is loved and adored. So, you know, when you think about that, it's easy for me to say, like, Richard Branson is someone who I think is successful. Because, look, he's doing awesome things. So is Elon Musk. So we can go through a countless number of names. But to me, the really successful ones are the ones that are just, they're just living it, and you don't even realize how much impact they're having in your life, because they're doing it because they love it. And are there tribes built around that? Yeah, there are. But I think that if you're only looking at the Richard Bransons, then if that's your definition of success, then you're always going to end up failing, because you're never going to be Richard Branson. I definitely won't, not with my head of hair.
And what is the best advice you ever received?
Best advice I ever received was, originally given to me in going to work. And this is by my father, and he said, go to work every day prepared to be fired. And I always, sometimes to a fault, was prepared to be fired. And don't tell your manager that you're prepared to be fired. I'll tell you that. But keep that one to yourself. But I still, to this day, I won't go into anything unless I am mentally prepared to walk out. There's not anything that I'm going to allow myself to be so stuck in that I'm forced to in any way contradict or violate my beliefs or values.
And what is one of your favorite books?
One of my favorite books is, I'll give you two. One is, because this first one is kind of a hard one to read. It's a little bit complicated. It's by Robert Bly. It's called Iron John. And it's a story about, it's actually, I think the subheading is a story about men. And it's a really, really fascinating understanding of the evolution of the idea of manhood and development of men in society. And working with a lot of entrepreneurs, I think that, who a lot of them are men that I work with, it's a fascinating way to understand the role that we as men really can play and can live into in society. The second one is by Lawrence Gonzalez. It's called Deep Survival. And it's about studying why certain people survive in survival, life or death situations. And when you read that, if you read that book and think about entrepreneurship while you read it, it's amazing the insights that you'll have. How many things apply in life or death situations that also directly apply to business. And that's my most gifted book. I give that to more people than any other book.
Okay. Can you elaborate a little bit on your philosophy when it comes to coaching executives?
Yeah, absolutely. my philosophy in coaching executives comes down to values. And it's that when you are completely in line with your values, you can make far better decisions than any goal planning that you ever made, that you could ever do. Because goals are something that are made in the rational mind, where values are far more emotionally based. So you have a much stronger connection with your values than you ever will with your goals. Because your goals change over time. You've got your core values that don't, and then you've got your secondary values that will change, but slowly. So my philosophy is working with entrepreneurs to really live in the moment and make decisions based upon their deepest values and make sure that everything is in line. And what that will allow them to do is, rather than allowing themselves to sort of sit back and allow fear to take hold, like we were talking about earlier, that it's something that they can then use their values to direct them to really face their own fear rather than using it as a motivating force to get away from. So tackling fear head on as opposed to waiting until it bubbles up and they're trying to get away. So value-based, very, very much, and using that to make the best possible decisions and having complete confidence in their decisions from day to day, minute to minute, second to second.
And what was your way for finding your values?
My way has been constantly developed, but it's something that is people growing up in modern society, we don't have a lot of real, like, cultural rituals. You know, we have high school, we have university, we have, playing on the football team or something, but we don't have a lot of big cultural rituals. And so we don't spend a lot of time. Most of us, if I ask you, what are your 10 most, like, core values? What are the 10 things that are most core to you? You're not going to sit here and fire off 10 things immediately and feel comfortable that those are the 10 things, because we don't spend this time thinking about it. So for me, it's been a process of really self-discovery, both in spending time alone in meditation. I spend a lot of time out in the desert, and I spend a lot of time out on the water as well. And that's something that where I can really get in touch with self, but also talking with others and reflecting and studying it. Books like Iron John, once again, are something that help crystallize those. But it's getting in touch with those core experiences throughout your life. So for me, it's reflecting on what were the galvanizing experiences in my life that really have defined who I am today. And those were the ways that I've been able to come up with those values and then refine them over time.
And if you could have dinner with anyone in history, who would you have dinner with?
I just read a biography of George Washington, so that's the first name that comes to mind. The second is Seneca, and I've always loved the Stoics, and I think that Seneca and his philosophies are something that are a nice, very nice bridge between, as a person that's grown up in the Western world, a nice understanding of really Eastern philosophy that's very applicable in the Western world. And so his essay on the shortness of life is something that I've traveled with many, many times and love bringing with me whenever I travel. I would have to say that would be certainly a fascinating conversation.
And what thing do you attribute to getting things done?
At one point it was fear, procrastinating until the deadline was, 20 minutes from now. But now it's much more a deep sense of purpose and allowing that to guide me in understanding what's important and what's not. And honestly, my productivity increases exponentially when I allow myself to fail more often. So allowing myself to fail, but remain in purpose while doing it, increases my productivity exponentially.
And you talk about purpose. How did you find your purpose?
through beating my head against the wall for a very long time. No, it's that's something where, you know, for me, purpose has been just giving myself up to service more. And after spending so much time building a business to make money, and then realizing the difference between building a business for money and actually serving people, and understanding what service means to me, that really has been my path to understanding my purpose, because it's been something that has, to me, service is a two-way street. Charity is just strictly giving, but service always has an element that's coming back to you. And so in getting that feedback through service, that has really helped clarify my purpose.
Do you have a habit, like monthly or quarterly, that you exercise that helps you to realign your purpose when you feel like you may be off sometimes?
Yeah. I've got a few. When it's, you know, weekly, I take a little bit of time typically on Sundays to review what I'm doing, and just, you know, 15 minutes reviewing what happened the previous week, what's going to happen the next, and then once again touching in on, you know, my mental, physical, relationship and financial health. The others are quarterly. I do a much deeper dive, something that I also do with my clients, really diving into the work that I'm doing. I actually have a baselining protocol that's going through and making sure that a lot of different things in my life are in line. And so I go through that to just ensure that, you know, all the boxes are checked. And then more annually, sometimes more if I need it, I go and spend anywhere from 5 to 10 days just by myself, typically out in Eastern California or in Utah, like a dirty hippie, just getting my, you know, getting out there and spending some time alone to get in touch with myself.
And can you share one model that you use when you coach people?
The model that I use to coach people is one of them is something called, that I call, the fear cycle, and that's going back to fear once again. It's the process of having someone go from understanding the stimuli that's coming into their life, that it's creating an emotion, which is fear, anxiety, some sort of stress or excitement, their reaction to that, and understanding that when that reaction, when it's a negative stimuli that they're reacting to, seeing that that's action that's taken until the stimuli, the perception of the stimuli decreases, and then they stop action. So then they're sort of in this nice, what a lot of people will call equilibrium, until another stimuli comes in, and then they go through the same cycle again. You can see this in, for instance, some marriages where the marital bliss part is just the time between arguments, you know? But that's one that I use a lot. Another one that has been hugely impactful in my life that I use all the time without even thinking is something called the drama triangle by a guy named Stephen Cartman. And he came up with it by studying fairy tales. And he studied the dynamics of different characters in fairy tales, and that there's three roles that are constantly played. One is the victim, then you have the persecutor or the villain, and then the rescuer, hero. And that dynamic is one where you really can't have one without the other. There's all three of those play together. And that the most fascinating thing about that is the victim is giving up their power to become a victim. They're giving it up to the persecutor. But the most fascinating thing is that the hero is only the hero because they're actually disempowering, taking power from the victim and saying, you know, the victim saying, poor me, and the hero says, poor you, let me help you. And when you think about that, particularly as a manager or even as a friend, definitely as a coach, or as a spouse, you start to realize that going in and helping people is oftentimes disempowering to them, where working more in a coaching role and helping them find their own strength to overcome something is hugely empowering. And to me, that's been a framework that has just absolutely changed the way that I approach management, how I approach even the way I consider how products are sold. It you see it in everywhere in life.
And how do you curate your relationships?
Curating relationships is one where that's a tough conversation to have, because how do you determine what is a positive relationship and what's a negative relationship? And it's oftentimes a very hard question to ask, to ask yourself. And so for me, I look at it that there's usually three types of relationships. The vast majority are sort of net zero, where there's no positive or negative outcome there. There's the net negative where it's bad. You know, you feel worse, you're drained, something negative is happening. You know, in the worst cases, they're abusive. Hopefully you're not experiencing that. But it's not a good thing. Then you have the net positive. And the net positive are the ones that energize you, lift you up, inspire you to be a better version of yourself, inspire you to reach higher levels. So for me, over time, I've really focused on the net positive and how do I focus my time on cultivating those net positive relationships. So I ask myself, you know, is this a positive relationship? If it's a net negative relationship, then it's got to go. But the net zero ones, they're, you know, as long as it's not taking up a lot of my time, I'm happy to keep them around to some extent. And then lastly, it's cultivating those net positive ones. Where also the most positive ones are not just the ones that inspire me and lift me up, but that I'm able to do the same for them. So it's a mutually beneficial relationship.
And what's your framework for making decisions?
It goes back to values. And that's, I actually use my values as a way to, like, a perfect decision for me is something that can really be in line with every single one of my values. And definitely with my core values. But and I try to make all of my decisions in line with those. But that is ultimately values and impact. And if I'm able to have a high level of impact, positive impact, and my values are in line, to me that's a great decision. And the decision-making protocol for me is, as I've identified this and I live within my values, the term authenticity is thrown around a lot. It's something that, as you become more and more used to living and identifying your values, where you're willing to stand up for those even in adverse situations, the decision-making sort of happens on its own because you start to live in a more authentic way. And you don't have to sit there and think, well, should I do this or shouldn't I do this? You know the answer. And if you have to stop and think, oftentimes that's a sign that you're making a poor decision.
And when you look back at your life, what is one decision that has changed your life in a big way?
Definitely leaving my job. leaving the safety of getting a nice paycheck in investment banking. But that was a huge, huge change. And I look at my colleagues that I had worked with that were, you know, in the same analyst class as me, and that was to see where they are now versus where I am today, at least in terms of life experience and things that have occurred. The choice to leave that job was something that put me on a path that I could have never imagined.
Thank you for listening, and see you next time.